William's New Year's Day. Mr. Moss, who owned the village sweet shop, handed a fruit drop to William. William received it gratefully.
"And what good resolution are you going to take tomorrow?" said Mr. Moss.
William crunched in silence for a minute. Then,
"Good resolution?" he questioned. "I ain't got none."
"You've got to have a good resolution for New Year's Day," said Mr. Moss firmly.
William pondered.
"Well, can't think of anything. You think of something for me."
"Well, you might take one to do your schoolwork properly."
William shook his head very firmly.
"Crumbs, no." "Or to be polite."
"Polite?"
"Yes, please and thank you, and if you don't mind me saying so, and if you excuse me contradicting of you, and can I do anything for you, and such like."
William was struck with this.
"Yes, yeah, I might be that. Yeah, I might try being that."
"How long has it to go on, though?"
"Oh, not long. Only the first day, generally. Folks generally give 'em up after that."
"What's yours?" said William. Mr. Moss leant forward confidentially.
"I'm going to ask her again."
"Who?" said William, mystified.
"Someone I've asked regular every New Year's Day for 10 year."
"Ask what?"
"Ask to take me, of course."
"Take you where? Where do you want to go? Why can't you go yourself?"
"To marry me, I mean," said Mr. Moss, blushing slightly as he spoke.
"Well," said William, with a judicial air, "I wouldn't have asked the same one for 10 years. I'd have tried someone else. You'd be sure to find someone that wouldn't mind you, with a sweet shop, too. She must be a softie.
Does she know you've got a sweet shop?"
The next morning, William leapt out of bed with an expression of stern resolve.
"I'm going to be polite," he remarked to his bedroom furniture. "I'm going to be polite all day."
He met his father on the stairs.
"Good morning, father," he said. "Can I do anything for you today?"
His father looked down at him suspiciously.
"What do you want now?"
William was hurt. "I'm only being polite. It's, you know, one of those things you take on New Year's Day. Well, I've took one to be polite."
His father apologized.
"Oh, I'm sorry. You see, I'm not used to it. It startled me."
After breakfast, William made his way to the sweet shop. Mr. Moss was at the door, hatted and coated, and gazing anxiously down the street.
"Good morning, Mr. Moss," said William, politely.
Mr. Moss took out a large antique watch.
"He's late," he said. "He's late. I shall miss the train. Oh, dear. It'll be the first New Year's Day I've missed in 10 years. Will you do something for me, and I'll give you a quarter of those new pink ones?"
William gasped. The offer was almost too munificent to be true.
"I'll do anything for that," he said simply. "Well, just stay in the shop till my nephew Bill comes. He'll be here in 2 shakes, and I'll miss my train if I don't go now. He's going to keep the shop for me till I come back. You can weigh yourself a quarter of those sweets."
William was left alone. The ideal of his childhood was realized. He had a sweet shop. He walked round the shop with a conscious swagger, pausing to pop a butterball into his mouth. It was all his, all those rows and rows of gleaming bottles of sweets of every size and colour, those boxes and boxes of attractively arranged chocolates. He owned them all. A small boy appeared in the doorway. William scowled at him.
"Well," he said ungraciously, "what do you want?"
Then, suddenly remembering his resolution,
"Please, what do you want?"
"Where's Uncle?" said the small boy with equal ungraciousness, "'cause our Bill's ill and can't come."
William waved him off. "That's all right. That's all right. You tell him that's all right. That's quite all right. See? Now you go off."
The small boy stood as though rooted to the spot. William pressed into one of his hands a stick of licorice and into the other a packet of chocolate.
"Now you go away. I don't want you here, see?"
The small boy made off clutching his spoils. William called after the retreating figure,
"If you don't mind me saying so."
He had already come to look upon the New Year's resolution as a kind of god who must at all costs be propitiated. Already the resolution seemed to have bestowed upon him the dream of his life, a fully equipped sweet shop. A thin lady of uncertain age came in.
"Good morning," she said icily. "Where's Mr. Moss?"
William answered as well as the presence of five sweets in his mouth would allow him.
"I can't hear a word you say," she said.
William removed two of his five sweets and placed them temporarily on the scales.
"Gone," he said, then murmured vaguely, "Thank you," as the thought of the resolution loomed up in his mind.
"Who's in charge?"
"Me," said William.
She looked at him with distinct disapproval.
"Well, I'll have one of those bars of chocolate."
William, looking round the shop, realised suddenly there was a chance of making good any loss that Mr. Moss might otherwise have sustained. He looked down at the tuppenny bars.
"Shillin' each," he said firmly.
She gasped.
"They were only tuppence yesterday."
"They've gone up since, if you'll kindly excuse me saying so."
"Gone up? Have you heard from the makers they've gone up?"
"Yes, mum," said William politely.
"When did you hear?"
"This morning, if you don't mind me saying so."
William's manner of fulsome politeness seemed to madden her.
"Did you hear by post?"
"Yes, mum, by post this morning."
She glared at him with vindictive triumph.
"I happen to live opposite, you wicked lying boy, and I know that the postman did not call here this morning."
William met her eye calmly.
"No, they came round to see me in the night, the makers did.
You couldn't have heard 'em," he added hastily.
"It was when you was asleep. If you'll excuse me contradicting of you."
It is a great gift to be able to lie so as to convince other people. It is a still greater gift to be able to lie so as to convince yourself. William was possessed of the latter gift.
"I shall certainly not pay more than tuppence," said his customer severely, taking a bar of chocolate and laying down tuppence on the counter. "And I shall report this shop to the profiteering committee. It's scandalous."
William scowled at her.
"They're a shillin'," he said. "I don't want your nasty old tuppences. I said they was a shillin'."
He followed her to the door. She was crossing the street to her house.
You old thief!" he yelled after her,
though, true to his resolution, he added softly, with dogged determination, "If you don't mind me saying so." He was next disturbed by the entry of another customer. Swallowing a nutty football whole, he hastened to his post behind the counter. The newcomer was a dainty little girl of about 9, dressed in a white fur coat and cap and long white gaiters. William had seen this vision on various occasions in the town, but had never yet addressed it. He smiled, a self-conscious, sheepish smile, as she came up to the counter.
"Please, I want 2 tuppenny bars of chocolate."
She laid 4 pennies on the counter.
You can have lots for that," said William huskily.
"What else would you like?" "Please, I haven't any more money,"
gasped a small, bewildered voice.
"Money doesn't matter. Things is cheap today. You can have anything you like for that fourpence. Anything you like."
"'Cause it's New Year's Day,"
said the vision, with a gleam of understanding.
Yes, 'cause it's that."
"Is it your shop?"
"Yes, oh yes," said William, with an air of importance. "It's all my shop. You can take anything you like."
She collected as much as she could carry and started towards the door.
"Thank you. Thank you ever so,"
she said gratefully.
"It's all right," said William, with an indulgent smile. "It's all right. Not at all. Don't mention it. Not at all. Quite all right."
He bowed with would-be gracefulness as she went through the doorway. As she passed the window, she stopped and kissed her hand. William blinked with pure emotion, then absent-mindedly crammed his mouth with a handful of mixed dewdrops. As he crunched, he caught sight of 2 of his friends flattening their noses at the window. He went to the door. They gazed at him in wonder.
"I've got a shop," he said casually. "Come on in and look at it."
They entered, open-mouthed. They gazed at the boxes and bottles of sweets. Aladdin's cave was nothing to this.
"How'd you get it, William?"
gasped Ginger.
"Someone gave it me," said William. "I took one of them things to be polite, and someone gave it me. Go on, just help yourselves.
Not at all. Just help yourselves and don't mention it.
They needed no second bidding. They went from box to box, putting handfuls of sweets and chocolates into their mouths. They said nothing, because speech was a physical impossibility. A close observer might have noticed that William now ate little. William himself had been conscious for some time of a curious and inexplicable feeling of coldness towards the tempting dainties around him. He was, however, loath to give in to the weakness, and every now and then he nonchalantly put into his mouth a toasted square or a fruity bit. It happened that a loutish boy of about 14 was passing the shop. At the sight of three small boys rapidly consuming the contents, he became interested.
"What you doing of?" he said indignantly, standing in the doorway.
"You get out of my shop," said William valiantly.
"Your shop?" said the boy. "You're blooming well pinching things out of someone else's shop. Here, give me some of them."
"You get out," said William.
"Get out yourself," said the other.
"If I'd not took one to be polite," said William threateningly, "I'd knock you down."
"Oh, you would you?" said the other, beginning to roll up his sleeves.
"Yes, I would too. You get out."
Seizing the nearest bottle, which happened to contain acid drops, William began to fire them at his opponent's head. One hit him in the eye. He retired into the street. William followed him, still hurling acid drops with all his might. A crowd of boys collected together. Some gathered acid drops from the gutter, others joined the scrimmage. William, Henry and Ginger carried on a noble fight against heavy odds. It was only the sight of the proprietor of the shop coming briskly down the sidewalk that put an end to the battle. The street boys made off in one direction and Ginger and Henry in another. William, clasping an empty acid drop bottle to his bosom, was left to face Mr. Moss. Mr. Moss entered and looked round with an air of bewilderment.
Where's Bill? He said.
He's ill, said William. He couldn't come. I've been keeping shop for you. I've done the best I could.
He looked round the rifled shop anxiously, but Mr. Moss hardly seemed to notice.
Thanks, William, he said almost humbly. William, she's took me. She's going to marry me. Isn't it grand? After all these years.
I'm afraid there's a bit of a mess, said William.
Mr. Moss waved aside his apologies.
It doesn't matter, William. Nothing matters today. She's took me at last. I'm going to shut shop this afternoon and go over to her again. Thanks for staying, William.
Not at all. Don't mention it, said William nobly.
Then, I think I've had enough of all that bein' plight. Will one morning do for this year, do you think? Yes. Well, I'll shut up. Don't you stay, William. You'll want to be getting home for lunch.
Lunch? Quite definitely, William decided that he did not want any lunch. The very thought of lunch brought with it a feeling of active physical discomfort, which was much more than mere absence of hunger. He decided to go home as quickly as possible, though not to lunch.
Goodbye, he said.
Goodbye, said Mr. Moss.
I'm afraid you'll find some things gone, said William faintly. Some boys was in.
Oh, that's all right, William, said Mr. Moss, roused again from his rosy dreams. That's quite all right.
But it was not quite all right with William. If you had been left at the age of 11 in sole charge of a sweet shop for a whole morning, would it have been all right with you? No. But we will not follow William through the humiliating hours of the afternoon. We will leave him pale and unsteady, but for now master of the situation, as he wends his homeward way.